Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose-Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I've been on this show. We've been doing this show for over five years, actually. We're going into our sixth year at this point. I'm hearing a little background noise there of some kind, so I hope maybe we can kind of lower that out. And each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between the well-being of ourselves, our families, our communities, our society, and the Earth itself. With all that goes on in our world, the choices we make as communities, as a society, and how they affect our food, water, air, earth, health, society, social structures, as well as the planet itself. I've covered a lot. I've been a lead reporter covering fracking from almost the very first day it became a popular concern on the Huffington Post, Alternet, and elsewhere. In more recent years, I've been covering pipelines, the trade deals, and all along the food supply and food systems, as well as our health choices and how we think about health and address it in a proactive and preventative and integrated, in holistic manner. All of these are topics we discuss on the show with various thought leaders, experts, advocates, authors, activists, scientists, filmmakers, and others. As listeners know, I've covered the trade deals a great deal, and they have been what I call a primordial concern, because if they pass, they really accelerate us on the negative spiral of climate chaos, and as such, we have stepped from kind of issue-by-issue policy reporting to more mega-issues in terms of our socio-political system and how we make choices as a society. With the primary elections that have been going on this political season have keen and important outcomes and long-ranging and long-lasting implications for both our democracy and the well-being of people and humans, all life species, plants, and the Earth itself. And so I've also been regularly covering those greater implications and the different issues that interconnect with them on the Connect the Dots. And that is why today, the day after a major primary, including the primary in the state of California, as we come almost to the very end of the primary season and move on into the national election cycle in terms of, candidates who will run and everything, one of the things that has been a singular issue this time that has really come to the fore is whether our election system is working and whether people who go out to vote for candidates can really trust the vote and trust the results and trust whether their votes are being counted fairly. And so I'm very grateful to have on the show today two experts who will be discussing that with me and sharing their insights. Positions look very closely at the California race. And I just want to say that we're getting a lot of background noise, so if anyone would like to either mute their phone or, kind of take a seat, hi, Bob, and be quiet, I'm going to introduce our two guests so that I want to make sure that everyone can hear the introduction clearly. Our two guests today are Lori Grace, who has founded a terrific organization called the Institute for American Democracy and Election Integrity. Just let that one sink in. That is like one of the most important things we need to be concerned about today. The organization is a 501c3 nonprofit, and Lori has been at the forefront of looking at monitoring, guaranteeing election justice and the integrity of the vote for a very long time. She's also an active environmentalist. She's been involved very actively with the Sierra Club, NRDC, and the Union of Concerned Scientists for over 20 years. She trained with Al Gore at the Climate Project, and she's committed to sharing with people about global warming. She also runs a nonprofit organization called the Sunrise Center, as well as a wonderful organic farm and retreat center on Maui called the Hale Akua Garden Farm. Her election integrity work is really critical to all of this environmental work, because we can't really make the right choices for a society if we don't have a solid, just, and functional and election system of integrity, really, is where what it comes down to. Our second guest is Bob Fatrakis, who is an American lawyer and a political author and writer. He is currently the professor of political science in the Social and Behavioral Sciences Department at Columbus State Community College. He's been involved with one of my favorite organizations, Free Press, which deals with the critical issue of journalistic integrity and the integrity of the media, which is something that in, you know, for a while, and especially in this election cycle, we've seen a real corruption of the media, which has been longstanding and going on for quite some time. Bob McChesney and John Nichols, who've written about this theme extensively, have been repeated guests on this program. Bob has also written a number of books on these topics, and he and Harvey Wasserman, a past guest on Connect the Dots, co-wrote "Did George W. Bush Steal Americans' 2004 Election?" He's an expert in the tells and what's going on behind the scenes in election rigging. So I'm happy to welcome both of you to Connect the Dots, Lori and Bob. Thank you so much for taking the time out the very early the next morning for you after this key primary election vote yesterday and last night to be with us here on Connect the Dots.
Thanks. Glad to be on.
Lori, do you want to just, tell our listeners a bit about how you got involved in this election issue and why you feel it's so critical?
Well, I got involved in 2003 with actually Bev Harris and Black Box Voting, and became aware that the election in 2000 actually had been stolen. And was involved with the film Hacking Democracy, and began to be aware that when we vote electronically, there isn't, and these votes are done by private corporations with proprietary software, there's no way we can guarantee our vote. But since then, I've been involved with the audit the vote, the 2004 election, and then I got involved with Bob Fatrakis and Harvey Wasserman and Cliff Arnebeck, actually, looking at seeking to stop 08 from being that election from being changed, and then in 2012. And then in this election, we're still dealing with the same thing. We're still dealing with our votes being counted by private corporations that have proprietary software, so we can't really examine the true vote. And I've been working with Bob and Harvey and Cliff since 2004 fairly continuously.
That is such crucial work. You know, one of the things that we're hearing in the current election cycle is, you know, somebody won, they won by this margin, they're the winner, they're whom people want. And I think there probably have been pioneers like yourselves who have kind of been on the forefront of looking at reality in terms of what's going on behind the scenes, while many, you know, the majority of people are just kind of somehow trusting it's okay. If they hear of any anomalies, they think people are being paranoid or conspiracy oriented. I mean, they believe, oh, look, you know, so-and-so won by this or that margin. And it hasn't occurred. It certainly hasn't occurred so extensively to myself and other Sanders supporters, you know, that people work for a candidate, they come out for a candidate, they work to involve others and engage others, see results that could be tainted. And it's almost like heresy to say this is going on. But if we can't count on the accuracy and honesty of the voting process, then, you know, what is everything else that we are doing in the political system? Where is the popular leverage? Bob, do you feel that people are, naive about this? I mean, is there a big disconnect between what the average person thinks is going on you know, in an election and the results that issue forth and what is actually going on behind the scenes due to the corporate management of the voting apparatus that Lori described.
Sure. Harvard and the University of Australia, Sydney, recently pointed out that the U.S. was 47th out of 47th in its voting processes regarding the 47 longstanding democracies. So, there's all sorts of signs. I mean, I don't know how people can miss. And Jimmy Carter told Der Spiegel a year or so ago that U.S. has a dysfunctional democracy. And he's also said he doesn't monitor U.S. elections because they're not transparent. So if you completely privatize, and the term Harvey Wasserman and I use, Jim Crow, right? You allow 50 different states to set up 50 different systems with 8,000, boards of elections and municipal registrars. You've essentially set your system up to be dysfunctional, non-transparent. And then when 11 or so of the results come in, and if they weren't in the United States, if they weren't U.S. states, if they were nations outside the United States, our State Department would not certify the election as viable and correct, but rather would be investigating for election irregularities and vote stealing and voter fraud. So you've got every single sign indicating that our system is privatized, that it's run in a manner that allows massive manipulation by party regulars all over the U.S., and people simply don't want to deal with what every person who looks at this for an hour or so would come to the conclusions. We've got all the problems of privatization. You've got partisan corporations for profit with secret proprietary code set up to do whatever they want with these systems, which are old and aging. Many of these computer voting machines around the country are 12 years old or 20 years old in some cases. So you've got all the signs indicating that someone is manipulating our election, and what they want to say is that would never happen in the United States. On the other hand, they'll say, oh, yeah, people are stripping the vote. They're stripping blacks. They're stripping young people from the voting rolls. They're deregistering them. That's happening. But no one would ever, ever think in the most powerful military nation on earth to adjust votes, even though they have access, motive, the central tabulating software. They would never, ever do that.
In other words, so for example, this happened in the New York primary election, and now it's just been happening, and I've been hearing reports all yesterday in the from friends in California in the primary vote, people in both cases. I mean, in New York, several hundred thousand people were purged from the polls. There were polling places that were closed. There were people whose registration was dropped, whose registration was changed against their knowledge, against their will. There were inadequate numbers of ballots. There were poll workers who gave faulty instruction or actually actively misdirected people. The proper kinds of ballots were not available. The hours were made inconvenient. Many polls were closed. And so on and on and on somebody that I know quite well from the national fracking community went to vote and was told that his registration had been changed to a mail-in vote. He's never voted by mail. He's always voted in person. No mail-in ballot was ever mailed to him. There are many other examples. So we hear all these kinds of, apparently isolated little stories, and then if people go to rallies where there's tens of thousands of even hundreds of thousands, 100,000 people, and they see all these people, we heard there was mass new registration in California, hundreds of thousands of people registering to vote for the first time, and then we don't see it reflected in the election results. then the problem becomes in people's minds, how do we go back and correct that there was some flaw whereby this guy's ballot was changed to a mail-in voting ballot without his knowledge? You know, how do we go back and correct that? Who is going back and correcting that? So this is kind of where it's left in the, you know, I'm scratching my head kind of puzzlement of Bernie supporters who see mass turnouts, mass activity, and then it's not reflected in the vote. But what both you are saying, Lori and Bob, is that actually that's just kind of like, you know, the fuzz of a two-day growth in terms of what's visible, but we actually have a long beard that grows all the way down to the navel of what's going on behind the scenes where the actual computerized vote could be, and in your, and you're saying it is being, technologically manipulated behind the scenes so that the actual percentage of voters, the numbers, and all the rest of it could be completely adjusted behind the scenes in ways that that we would be completely ignorant about. Now, what you've talked about is that the access to do that is there in spades without any oversight. What is the evidence that that is actually occurring, and what is it that is occurring in these black boxes?
Well, they're stripping and flipping, and they go together. If you privatize, and this has happened all over America, if you allow partisan companies here in Ohio, where I'm speaking from, essentially the voter databases, who's registered to vote, is run by the Right to Life movement. The Rapp family, well-known major contributors to Right to Life, own a company called Triad. They do the maintenance and they adjust these voting rolls. And then, and in the past, prior to that, it was Diebold, which was so corrupt it went out of business and was bought up by ES&S for, quote, a pattern of worldwide corruption. And again, these are the people that purge a quarter of the voters in Cleveland, 24.96%, between the 2000 and 2004 election. So we're supposed to believe that in Ohio, 305,000 people, overwhelmingly Democrats from a progressive city, were just, it was a coincidence. The mass purgings are coincidence. And then, you know, if you weren't purging all these people, Ohio really wouldn't be a battleground state. The same thing in Florida, Greg Palast's great work in 2000. Also, the rise of these e-voting tablets all over the country, which are proprietary, which melted down in Cincinnati in the 2015 election regarding legalized marijuana, as well as the software on the central state tabulators. You know, we took screenshots and videos of three of the tabulators flipping. You know, in one county, it's winning 65-35, it flips. So then we call up the Secretary of State's office and say, we would like the audit logs. And they say, well, you know, it was human error and we weren't recording. We didn't think it was important enough to actually record this on the audit logs in this election. So you've got these activities that have been going on for, you know, steadily since 2000, the stripping of votes, the manipulation of voter rolls from these private companies, and everyone acts like it's a coincidence. You've got the rise of these really crazy, irrational coincidence theorists that won't look at the obvious data that says people are trying to manipulate these elections because so much is at stake. And there's really no way to stop them other than intermediately going to open source code, but ultimately returning to what most democracies vote on, you know, sort of paper and pen.
So, you know, you were monitoring or in some way kind of doing a parallel check of some selected voting areas in California yesterday to kind of track what was going on. Can you describe what that was, what your purpose was, and what you found?
Yes, I can describe it. First of all, I want to say that a man named Richard Charnin, who's a statistician and mathematician, has been observing that with screenshots taken of exit polls shortly before the final vote totals come in, there's been a significant difference between the number of Sanders voters and the number of Clinton voters in about 10 states. In other words, there's a last-minute rise in Clinton voters at the very end, and a drop in apparent Bernie voters between the exit polls in other states and in about, I think, about 10 states. And this is, there's been a shift before this for the last 10 years, something he calls the red shift, where vote totals, differences between exit polls and electronic voting machine totals seem to move to the right about 4%, which is something that doesn't attract that much attention, but which is something that can make or break a different election. Anyway, I became alarmed about this, as did Bob and Cliff Arnebeck, about this kind of pattern that is showing up between Sanders and Clinton this year. The Republican vote stayed about the same between the exit polls and the vote totals. But what
happened? Let me just interject something there for the to ask you an additional question, which is, you know, I think many of the listeners may not be familiar with exit polls and with their role in determining election integrity. You know, in other words, okay, people might think, oh, you asked a couple of people and maybe they weren't honest, and election polls, they, so what? I think a lot of people don't really understand election polls. If you could,
so
just
Bob,
kind of
why don't you answer that one?
Okay,
well,
and then we'll bounce back.
And again, I've been an international election observer. I'm very proud of the fact that I co-wrote the report to the United Nations for the International Election Observer in the first election in El Salvador in 1994, following the civil war. And again, I edited that report. And exit polls are the international gold standards. Worldwide, the U.S. State Department, and there's books on this and pamphlets, through the AID, the Agency on International Development, regard exit polls as the most accurate polls. You know, 95 times out of 100, those of you who remember your basic stats, what we call the confidence interval, that the poll should fall within the margin of error, which is often plus or minus 2 or 3. What you're getting is elections that are falling so far outside the margin of error. You know, the deviation is so broad, they're statistically impossible. You know, the numbers now are in, you know, likelihood that 10 of these elections showed obvious signs of fraud in Clinton's election. We'd expect one outside the margin of error in 26 elections, you know, with 95% confidence, and only one for Sanders, and we'd expect that one. But when you get 11 of these in favor of Clinton, if it was not the United States, we would immediately go in with forensic teams and see who was hijacking or flipping the vote. So you can say all these things, but the reality is the exit polls are the most accurate. And if they're not accurate, we need to know why the Edison Research Group, which has a monopoly on these with the major media pool, which includes all the broadcast networks, as well as CNN and the AP, which clearly showed its bias, and in one of the most reprehensible actions I've ever seen, by suddenly learning to count or recount and projecting Clinton the winner. So these are the people that have a monopoly on this data. And initially, they're saying in almost all these elections, Sanders is winning or doing better than expected. Clinton's supposed to win by 5 points in Ohio. She wins by 14. That is a statistical impossibility. When someone keeps winning the Super Lotto, Powerball, Pick Five, all on the same night over and over again, you've got to question whether somebody's rigging the vote or the lottery.
And I'd like to add something. And it's very interesting and curious that Edison Research, together with the Media Consortium, canceled all the exit polls for the remaining elections, including the one in California, New Jersey, and others. And the there started to be press about the differences between the exit polls and the election results, the electronic election results in these states. It was coming out in some TV shows and also in on the internet. And so if anything was happening, which appears to be what's happening, and you don't want to get caught and you don't want attention brought to this, of course you cancel these things. So I have really cared about empowering both myself and other American citizens with hope and strategies to try to create change rather than to sink into our powerlessness. So I actually took a significant role with the Institute in empowering and supporting three things. A lawsuit that is coming forward in Ohio shortly demanding that the raw data be, exit poll data be released the 10 states or 11 states that were problematic. And then also here we did something to stimulate citizens to give them a chance to feel a hands-on role in their own democracy. And we put up together with Election Justice USA and my institute and this other organization named Democracy Counts, we put forward citizen exit polls in a number of precincts and also Democracy Counts in a number of precincts, which is an election audit using an open source software. And the exit polls that were also done were using a randomized system that's more of the traditional exit polls. We did our little one. We don't know all the results yet. But one thing that's really puzzling to me is all the major polls showed a difference between Bernie and Clinton of about 2 points difference. The electronic vote totals are dramatically different in California. The question is, there's obvious changes and problems with the old machines, the purging, all of that that had similarities to other places in the country. The Bernie Sanders campaign was trying to do as much as they could to be educating voters about how to shift to Democratic ballots. You have a huge increase in Democratic ballots and people going to the polls with Democratic ballots. To be honest, I haven't actually even met a Clinton supporter here in California so far. And I was canvassing, and there have been huge rallies, as you well know. And so I am very surprised to find a large difference electronically in the votes when three polls showed a 2-point difference just 2 days ago, or yesterday, actually.
Yeah, I've seen a 2-point difference, a 1-point difference. I mean, the thing that's most astounding about this is, you know, here the whole basis for America's interventionist policies abroad is that we are the guarantors of democracy. You know, we're going abroad under you know, the specious, you know, flag of, you know, we're here to protect democracy. You know, when we go to war, which a lot of people question as well, and yet here the very rules that we would be seeking to enforce internationally for other countries, and even in some cases intervening if they don't occur, do not apply to our own democracy and to this country. And moreover, many people don't even know or care or believe that it would be necessary to kind of examine or explore whether our system does truly represent the vote of the American people. You know, that is, I mean, what you're reporting is there's like a huge gap between what's going on and what people believe about our democracy and how it functions. I'm shocked about the fact that, you know, this group that you mentioned could just cancel doing exit polls. That in and of itself is a huge anti-democratic telltale move. I mean, that they would have the power and authority to remove such information is shocking. I'm also really disturbed when you say that, you know, as Bob has defined, a 1 or 2 point difference would be within, maximum would be within a margin of error. And you, Lori, have just said that there has been, since the year 2000, which is when, you know, this country's rightward shift has been so pronounced, and it's blamed on Nader by some people, and yet, you know, you're pointing out that there's a steady 4% discrepancy, and in this election, those numbers are even higher. So I'm just sort of summarizing everything that you've been telling me and our listeners today. You know, one further question I have is, you mentioned that 10 or 11 states have had even more, far more significant than a 4% deviation between the exit polls and the results. Are these critical states? In other words, are people going in every state that there is and kind of doctoring with all of this, or is it really more critical states with large voter populations or that are, you know, key swing states in some way where this tampering is being, you know, shown to as have occurred?
Well, I mean, some of those states like Massachusetts, which is significantly outside of the margin of error, I mean, it was thought that it could put an end to the campaign for Clinton had she not won in that state. Also, you know, Illinois, Missouri, again, and Arizona, where the tracking polls prior to the election are showing that Bernie's winning by 10 points. And suddenly, you know, with the exit polls there are so laughable, you know, people should be in prison. And suddenly there's a 70% reduction in precincts in the Phoenix area. I mean, all of these have had a tremendous impact on momentum and the viability of the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. A lot of these were very, very key elections where it would have really been difficult for people to stay with Clinton had she lost Illinois, had she lost Massachusetts, had she lost Missouri, had she lost New York. In there, not only was the results suspect, you know, significantly different, but just the massive stripping of the vote, whether it's 126,000 or 166,000 in Brooklyn, primarily in a Sanders stronghold with lots of new voters, or even in here in Ohio, where she picks up 9% of the vote unexplained. It absolutely makes no sense. These are all red flags. You know, when I was in El Salvador looking at the election, if the Arena Party, the right-wing party, would have came in and said, there'll be no problem. We're going to use secret software. We're going to hire a company that donates money to us and supports us. And we're going to not let anyone see the source code. And we'll tell you the voting results from the black box. You know, it would have been an easy report to write. I would have said, presumption of fraud, invalid election.
Well, I'd like to add one thing because, you know, when America has been made dependent on this dysfunctional system, and when it's the only system you have, so to speak, there's a place where everybody, including the politicians, end up wanting to rely on something and not look at the dysfunctionality because there's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so it's called being cognitive dissonance. You move to a place of cognitive resonance where you kind of believe in the system, but you don't really, but that's all we have, so let's make the best of it. And then there's another issue with campaigns, and I hope the Sanders campaign is not going to follow suit with this, but I don't know, of avoiding the sore loser complex. And not really looking at things, just like Kerry didn't really look at things, and so anyway, these are big issues, and so when we through the Institute put forward a grant to support an open source election audit called Democracy Counts, which is easy to use, run basically by volunteers or for a stipend, we're going to be very interested to see how these results are turning out. But it is very suspicious that the media consortium, together with Edison Research, canceled everything in California, and that our electronic vote totals are profoundly different from the last set of polls.
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
They canceled after legal notice was sent to them to hold all of their documents. They canceled soon after that when people were wondering how there's such great pollsters overseas but seem to get, a third or more wrong in the United States. And their adjusted polls, seemed to indicate Sanders was doing quite well in line with the tracking polls prior to the election. So what they do here is they assume that the easily hackable, ancient, and bad central tabulating software system must be right, and no one could dare call into question that these 20-year-old computers known for flipping votes could be wrong. So they simply accept the vote from the machine instead of taking a close look at the machine or wondering why you're using source codes that are 20, 30 years old. And like the GEMS, General Election Management System, the central tabulator software, that even though people aren't fractions, actually can count votes in fractions, can make a person a tenth of a vote, and clearly could be programmed to flip votes.
Mm-hmm. By that mathematical function. So this whole thing that we've been hearing, the meme, it's the math, what you're talking about, Lori and Bob, is that, is the real math of how this is happening and the collusion. Because I don't even understand how someone could how an outside agency could spontaneously decide, we're the ones with the authority and the role of providing exit polls, and now we simply won't do it. We're going to exclude the rights of the voters of these states by just arbitrarily deciding not to track it. I mean, A, it smells in terms of everything you're talking about, but even that they would have the right to make a unilateral decision that disenfranchises all of these states and their voters is truly shocking. I also just want to mention something that, respond to something, Lori, that you brought up, because I've been thinking about it a lot. Mm-hmm. It's very shaming and inappropriate for anyone who values democracy, not that my candidate will win right now and today, but values the democratic process and its integrity, which is what
if we care about any candidate winning at any time, we all have to be united in that rather than going, mine won, thumb my nose at you. That's not democratic in attitude or functionally. So this whole thing about sore losers and whiners, I actually wrote about, really irritates me because I see it used over and over again to, shut down conversation and shut down dialogue, openness, and consideration of these issues. I actually wrote something about this on my Facebook page today. If we as social creatures care about exclusion based on gender, race, or economic opportunity, if we raise the profile on rape, abuse, and victimization, where do we come off deriding anyone calling attention to a problem as a whiner?
Exactly.
So this whole statement, that such and such is feminist, there's currently another major news event in the culture that people are talking about is this horrible recent tragic rape incident and, of an unconscious young woman and the sentencing around it. So, there is such an incredibly bizarre double standard in wanting to raise the profile on that and then turning around and deriding a mass populist candidate as a whiner for wanting better guarantees on something that we all should want better guarantees on, which is the integrity of our elections. So, I have to ask one quick question, and then I want to go to what we should be doing in our elections, to make it better. What do we need to do? Is it possible? I mean, for example, people are now going, well, now that, Hillary Clinton has won, will you vote for Trump? With what you're talking about, the real question would become, does it matter? Does it matter, who anyone votes for? So, we all have to care about this. But before we get into what would be the constructive way to change our election system, which, I think we need to think about that, I just have to ask, as a Brooklyn resident, a New York State voter, a voter in Brooklyn, New York, and someone who really witnessed firsthand and was shocked and radicalized, really, by what I saw and found about this, what went on in New York? Because I think what people, when you speak of cognitive dissidence, what people who are just going, hooray, my candidate won, supposedly, even if it's by this manipulation, which it seems to be, what they don't understand is what it is, and then they want to recruit the other people and sort of pressure or shame them into voting for the candidate who's kind of illegitimate win they're celebrating. There's a problem right there. But the other problem is that people don't understand what it's like to have the experience which you described, Lori, and which I experienced in Brooklyn, which is that, you barely meet anyone, as you described, who's even voting for the other side, and yet there's like a 14% supposed win. In New York, there was massive enthusiasm. It was an engagement, and people were very savvy. So the accusation, oh, these young people, they didn't know how to register or something. I mean, they need to do their research. I find them to be better informed about everything, including the political process, than many over the age of 40. So what went down in New York? Just indulge me for a minute by sharing your perception of that, and then I'd like to move along and talk about what possible remedies there are for this.
One thing I would like to mention is that I was informed that the last purging that happened in New York was done less than 90 days before registration, and that is actually a felony. And I don't quite. There was also that you know better than I do this registrar.
Yes, I know all about the registrar, but I'm just in terms of the global thing. How far off was New York from what the exit polls showed and what the expectations would have been?
Well, I both with respect to New York and other states, if you were going to look at the differences between the exit polls and the electronic vote totals, and we're going to trust more what came out of the exit polls, actually Bernie Sanders would be the presidential candidate. the primary, and you know, I mean, for the convention.
Right.
And
I think a lot of people feel that.
What the lawsuit is seeking to do.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people feel and sense that.
Mm-hmm. So, well, what the lawsuit is seeking to do is to demand the raw data from Edison Research and the media consortium, and if it gets opposed or appealed, to make that known that an organization is fighting not to reveal this data based on the First Amendment, but to bring it forward about the commitment to non-transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm I'm a bit worried that the Sanders campaign, that's relied also on the election system that we have, that wanted everybody to believe in the system, of course, is going to just go into cognitive, I don't know if they're going to take seriously what's going on and take a stand for their voters, or whether they'll just collapse and participate in the system as we've watched happen before.
That is I really hear you on that concern. And you know, one of the things, having gone through, like, you know, I've been in the experience of having gone through this episode. It happened, you know, in New York, and what you say there is what people on the ground engaged, looking at who shows up, calling voters, talking to voters, and doing all of that election outreach and getting the responses. You know, I think a lot of people sense that he's a popular candidate. There's tremendous enthusiasm. People are signing up. They're turning out in droves. And many people sense, without your knowledge of the statistics that prove this, that are being, you know, shared on today's program, a lot of people sense that this is something is very off and that Bernie has been winning, but we haven't known it. And yet you're kind of considered a nut for even having that gut-level response, which I share. And I think it's great to actually understand that the math is there, too, but that we need the information in order to get that math. But when you're in an early state like New York, and then you watch everyone else going, we're going to win, yay, California. And my question all along, having seen what happened in New York, was how, given this situation, how is this going to happen? And yet, when it hasn't happened to you, it reminds, again, there's an abuse of something here, theme to me, for those of us who really are feminists. Till It Happens to You, which was the big song about abuse at the Academy Awards. Till It Happens to You, it doesn't seem real. So it doesn't seem real to those who are voting on the other side, and it doesn't seem real to people until they directly kind of experience it, and then it becomes this thing of, oh, well, don't be a sore loser and everything else. And it is and I really share your concern. And I think it's the Sanders voters that really have to, you know, demand that we know what's going on. Or I think what we can expect is a massive withdrawal and cynicism of, you know.
Exactly.
And in fact, well, as you described, the rightward move that's been, you know, blamed on Nader insanely, you know, because of tainted results in one state, you know, is then put on, you know, will continue to march forward in a time when we can't afford it because of climate change.
Well, think about New York. I mean, this happened to people in Florida in 2000. You were in your church bus, you were in your church van, and suddenly for the first time in history, the state police are stopping you and demanding to know where your limousine license is, or they're going to arrest you and ticket you. Or you're not a felon, but you have the same or similar name, and you're black and Hispanic, and you show up to vote, and you're 19, and your name's Michael Jackson, but because a white guy in Texas who's 49's name's Michael Jackson, you can't vote. Or 20,000 votes get switched in Volusia County. 16,000 are subtracted from Gore and 4,000 added accidentally to Bush. And then John Ellis, the first cousin of President Bush, on a 30-day contract, at Fox calls the election, which is too close to call. And then 2004, when we were massively victimized, and black people in 42 precincts in the inner city waited for 7 hours because the machines were missing. I mean, they did everything possible in New York, and it's all predictable. I could tell you by the laws of the state how you're going to rip it off. It's a closed primary. So all these new voters enthusiastic for Bernie are going to go to the polls and sign up, right? Sign up to vote in the Democratic primary. Oh, lo and behold, the private companies and the Democratic Party regulars and hacks that run the election bureau accidentally put them in as independent. Oh, they can't vote. Oh, the we changed the hours on when to vote. All of this stuff has been done repeatedly from Florida to Ohio to other states. And they used every one of those predictable tactics, and everyone says, let's not look on at that. Let's celebrate, you know, Clinton's victory. It's an illegal, fraudulent victory against the first mass movement in the United States, probably arguably since 1912 with Debs, where someone who wasn't a corporate capitalist, who wasn't, you know, pro-war, created a mass following. And all of these tactics, we can go state by state. In California, which is a modified open state, what do you do? You put people in party categories. You say, I'm an independent, but I want to vote in the Democratic primary. They put you in the American Independence Party, or they stick you in the Green Party or the Republican Party. All of these tactics are predictable. They've been used over and over again. They were used by Karl Rove in 2000 and 2004, and somebody was using them on behalf of the Clinton campaign, including many of these party regulars pledged, to vote for it regardless.
Mm-hmm. And then if people then go, well, let's start a lawsuit, or let's write to the attorney general, or, you know, let's make the governor aware of this, then they have the same thing. The very unanimity of Democratic political leaders, with very few deviations, right away, you know, while everyone is looking, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, not into him at all, but while everyone is looking in that direction and going demagogue, totalitarian, anti-democratic, etc., you know, what about a lineup where, you know, so few people can participate, you know, can step out of it? Everyone has to be locked in for one candidate. What do you call that? You know, what is that supposed to be? I'm talking about the elected officials, whether they're superdelegates or anything else. Only a handful, the Nina Turners, everyone's afraid for their job. They're afraid to step out of line. They're afraid to be excluded, to be called a whiner. I mean, this is not a Democratic Party. If, you know, there isn't, where people occupy different points on the spectrum and are entitled to voice that. This right away is anti-democratic. And yet, these are considered, you know, the fair-minded party, the people to whom we turn if there is an improper situation with an election. And, you know, we can't turn to them. I mean, the thing that strikes me coming from, you know, the New York neighborhoods as I do, is this reminds me of a mob protection racket. Where everyone has to participate.
Just like the mob, there's consequences. I was Governor Brown's spokesperson in 92, and I differed with the Clintons, the Clintonistas, on NAFTA, and essentially all my money from the labor unions was froze up in my run for Congress against John Kasich. It's one of the reasons I ended up leaving the party, because of the lockstep enforcement that does in fact happen if you don't go along with the anointed one.
Right, right. Anti-democratic. I think we really, you know, have a crisis in our democracy. I know that it's not your business and we're actually coming down to the end of the show, so maybe we'll save that, bring you back on and save that for a later discussion, because we are going to have to end the show within the next couple of minutes here. But, you have this lawsuit progressing. What can listeners, and I think it's extremely important that Sanders followers stay engaged rather than folding and press the candidate to do the same. I mean, I get that as a major takeaway here. How can they do that? Where can they connect with others? How can they support your efforts?
All right. So one thing they can do is go to the Institute website, which is trustvote.org, and they can now contribute to the lawsuit and the cost of the lawsuit. I mean, we're up against very major corporations. There's going to be a lot of money needed to take the next step forward. The first step is underway, but that's one thing that they can do. The other thing is if it would be so wonderful if the campaign could begin to doubt what they were looking at, pay more attention to what we were trying to get through to the campaign for ages, and there was a huge distance that we couldn't go across. Now if the campaign could actually think and come to the place that they may have been screwed with, I would really like that. Rather, it's almost like they're election holics, where you can't quite recognize the problem and you have to keep on using the same system. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
And to move to a place of going into recovery and starting to take a stand for open source of voting where people can look at the software and to take a stand for their rights and not to be slaves of a massive corporate system, some of which is even controlled from outside our country in Barcelona, Spain, and in Toronto. So, that's what I'm hoping for, and I'm hoping that people will stay in touch with trustvote.org and also continue to look for updated articles on freepress.org and take a stand for their democracy. And the people who participated in the privately funded exit polls and election audits that we did, which we don't know the results of yet, in California, all said that participating hands-on in their democracy was really emotionally satisfying. And we may find very screwed up results, but we don't know yet.
All right. Well, I'll bring you back on the show when those results are clear, because this is such an important topic. And I just want to thank you both, Lori Grace, Bob Fitrakis, for your outstanding work over many years, your work this year, and your ongoing and future work to help us restore democracy and a vote we can trust to this country. And thank you, listeners, for being with me today on Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. We'll be back again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Be well and get out there and get involved.